Welcome to the TechCast. I'm producer Becca Refford. This is TechCast episode number 94. Ken Rimple talks to Luke Wagner about WebAssembly. Luke Wagner is a research engineer at Mozilla, the makers of Firefox and shepherds of the JavaScript language specification, known as ECMAScript and managed by the famous TC39 subcommittee. Luke and his group are working on building a specification for and implementation of a binary runtime for the web. Known as WebAssembly, this runtime would execute binary code that could be written in any number of source languages and operate at fast speeds. Mozilla and the WebAssembly W3C community group are working on finalizing the initial specification now. Ken spoke to Luke last week about his role in this effort and his upcoming talk at Philly Emerging Tech 2016.
The TechCast is created by Chariot Solutions, a full-stack application development consultancy committed to building high-quality software solutions. With expertise in Java, Scala, iOS, Android, Angular, and other open-source technologies, we can bring the right blend of expertise to bear for your organization. Visit us on the web at chariotsolutions.com.
Before we get started, here are a few upcoming events. Chariot Sujan Kapadia will be speaking at two events this spring. He'll be doing a dev workshop on Scala at Philly Tech Week on Wednesday, May 4th, 2016. He's also speaking at New York City Reactive, date to be announced. Visit Reactive New York on meetup.com to join. The links for these events will be available on our show notes for this podcast at chariotsolutions.com/techcast. Now, on to the interview with Luke Wagner.
All right, well, Luke Wagner, welcome to the Chariot TechCast.
Ah, thanks for having me.
So, Luke, you work at Mozilla, right?
That's right.
And so I know that your talk at Philly Emerging Tech is about WebAssembly, and I guess Mozilla is one of the sponsors or groups working on it. Before we get into that, and that's our topic for today, let's talk a little bit about your background. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I've been working at Mozilla for about 6.5 years, and I started in the JavaScript engine team and worked on kind of JIT backend optimizations for a while, then got interested in this weird sort of JS that MScripten was compiling, so that was the C++ to JavaScript compiler, and then started on the ASM.js project, and then I moved over to be a research engineer and did a lot more work on ASM.js, optimizing it, and then over the last year started working with the WebAssembly project, and I'm currently the Mozilla chair of the WebAssembly community group.
So let's talk a little bit about this. So, you know, most developers on the web know JavaScript and its runtime, and, you know, the various browser manufacturers implement a runtime for JavaScript, and it's a standard, but it's, I mean, I wouldn't call it an interpreted language because you do compile it to memory, but it is a programming language that is basically downloaded from the web in source form. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about the origins of this kind of binary-ish format. You just mentioned, as one of the first things, you mentioned MScripten and then ASM.js. What are those?
So in the beginning, Alon Zakai, the author of MScripten, wondered, why isn't people are compiling all sorts of stuff to JavaScript? You know, Java, CoffeeScript, all sorts of very JS-like languages. Why not C++? Why isn't that been done already? And so he said, well, I'll try it. And there's a great open source compiler out there called LVM and Clang, and this is what's shipped with Apple by default, on OS X by default. And so he was able to take the output of LVM and compile that to JavaScript. And he worked on that for a while, and when typed arrays came along, that was a really big boost in the speed, because now there's a pretty efficient way to represent memory. And then as that was also during the JavaScript performance wars, so the performance of this MScript and code kept getting better and better and closer to native. And that's when it started switching from a funny curiosity to a, hey, this is actually pretty cool. This is pretty amazing. Let's invest more in this and see how far we can take it.
So MScripten then is, as you said, it was C++ compiled to, was it to JavaScript?
That's right.
Okay. So you're getting fast speed out of JavaScript faster than what you would normally do by hand unless you really knew all the tricks. Is that the idea?
Yeah, and this was initially counterintuitive to all of us. We thought, well, surely it's going to be slower than handwritten because it's going to have the automatic translation will add all sorts of gunk. But when you study it, what you see is that this compiled code is doing stuff that no sane human would ever write, stuff that, you know, it isn't modular. It's, there's no idiomatic JavaScript. It's basically representing all memory as a giant array of bytes and loading and storing from that array of bytes at different offsets.
Oh, wow.
And so that's nothing you would want to write by hand. It's like, take all your field names, throw them away. Take everything you like and throw it away. But the performance is great because the JIT compiler can really understand that this is an array of bytes, and it can, you know, the bounds check to see that, you know, your loading in range is cheap and can be hoisted. And then once you've done that, you can just load and store those arrays of bytes just with like machine instructions. So it can really run fast, even just in a normal JavaScript VM.
So you're basically taking whatever code they write, or not you, but he is, in this LLVM Clang implementation with MScript, and turning it into a giant array, or maybe not giant, but an optimized array. And so you really aren't really even hitting garbage collection issues, really.
That's right. When you say malloc in C++, what you're doing is claiming a region of bytes. Mm-hmm. You're not actually at GC allocating things. So yeah, that's one of the benefits of this compiled C++ code is that it's really not GCing very much.
That's pretty amazing. So that was MScript. And then what led to the rise of the next one, which is this ASM.js?
Yeah, so ASM.js is still kind of just JavaScript. Mm-hmm. All we did is we said, let's look and profile the startup time of this MScript and output. And, you know, it's generating 10, 20, sometimes 40 megabytes of JavaScript, which, you know, is way bigger than your average web app. And when you profile the startup time, we could see just a lot of time spending warming up code that makes total sense for normal handwritten JavaScript because, you know, mostly it's JavaScript you see on the web's totally dead code, and so you want to be pretty lazy, and then when it does run, you want to interpret it a little bit, and then only after it runs for a while do you baseline compile it and then let it warm up for even longer and profile it and see what types, and then use the big beefy compiler only at the end of this whole pipeline. Well, if you add all that up for megabytes and megabytes of code, that's a lot of time kind of spent in this interim state, which was making the startup time of these giant JS applications, you know, worse than it could be. So with what we kind of realized is when you compile from C++, this JavaScript code is this very fixed static structure. It's using it. There's no types in JavaScript, but it's using the operators of JavaScript in such a way that you can kind of see the types. You can say, this is clearly an inty thing. Mm-hmm. This is clearly a doubly thing. And when you can see all this without even running the code even at all, so you can just look at the source, what you get from parsing JavaScript, and immediately know the types of everything. And when you do that, you can be way more aggressive and fast at compiling this to machine code that's fully optimized and kind of like what a C compiler would emit. And this is still all within JavaScript. It's still using the JavaScript parser in the front end and using the existing JIT compiler in the back end. So it's just sort of a new arrow that takes you straight from the parse tree straight to the back-end compiler. So we got to reuse all the existing work we'd been, you know, putting into building these big, beefy JIT compilers and optimizing the parser. It was just this one new path that kind of circumvented or, you know, short-circuited the normal warm-up path.
So I'm a little clueless here about ASM.js, but ASM.js itself, are you writing source code in JavaScript and just optimizing it down?
Well, you're still starting with C++ or some other language.
Starting with MScript and...
That's
and then
right.
Taking your MScript and output and kind of optimizing it through ASM?
Yeah, so what MScript will do is the JavaScript it generates, it's still just JavaScript, it just happens to what you can think of ASM.js is as a question, does this JavaScript conform to this special pattern? It's like a big pattern on JavaScript. So all MScript did was have to tweak its output to precisely match the pattern. And then we have this one hint that doesn't change the meaning, doesn't change the behavior, but it's just a hint that says, hey, I'm about to give you a bunch of ASM.js. And if you stick that hint at the front, then we activate this special mode that first we look, do you match the pattern? And if yes, you get to take this fast path. So all MScript had to do was tweak the output to conform to the pattern and then put this little note at the top that says, I'm using ASM.
So is that something that's specific to Firefox? Or did you get this into different runtimes and different browsers?
Well, at the very beginning, you know, the first demonstration of ASM.js was only in Firefox. But since then, the Chakra team, so that's the JavaScript engine in Edge, they got interested, and they've now implemented and shipped a very similar style of validating the ASM.js and having this fast path. And then after or around the same time, Chrome has a new backend. Now, it's a general purpose backend called TurboFan, but they currently only activate it when they see this Asm.js hint. But it's still using general optimizations. And even more recently, like in the last few months, they announced that they would be adding an Asm.js validator kind of in the style of Firefox and Edge. And we haven't yet to see precisely what that looks like, but I think it'll be kind of in the same style. And the last one, Safari's JavaScript engine does not have a special validator, but they have looked at these Asm.js workloads and made measurable performance improvements steadily over the last 3 years. So that's a lot of progress on all the JavaScript engines.
So
over the last 3 years.
Safari's faster by default because they've analyzed this. You could still run it in Safari because it's still JavaScript. It's just not taking that direct to the bytecode, direct JIT path.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. And I don't have a precise measurement of how much that changes load time or performance,
but
it's always changing.
Okay. All right. So if there's Asm.js and you've got Emscript and Asm, why? What's the reason for WebAssembly?
Yeah, great question. So we started doing a bunch of load time optimizations and stuff that had never been kind of done before for JavaScript because we had all this structure. And one was we cache machine code. After we compile it once, we actually store the machine code on the disk. And the next time you load the same identical bytes, we just say, hey, we already have machine code for that. We skip the whole compilation process together. And so that was one thing. We did parallel compilation. So if you have multiple cores, we fork off tons and tons of little tasks. So that way we can saturate all your cores while you're, while during this load time.
Nice.
And each of those showed, big improvements. So, the load time started at, kind of 30 seconds and they got way down. So now they're at like, depends highly on your machine, but, getting down to like 2 and 3 second load times. Huge improvement, but when you kind of look, you keep reprofiling and saying, where's the bottleneck now? And the parser becomes a bigger and bigger bottleneck. Because what has to happen is those, you get a bunch of characters, JavaScript source, and you have to parse it. And that's actually a somewhat expensive process. You have to build hash tables to represent the scopes and do a lot of lookups. And, with everything else fixed, the parser starts to become the bottleneck.
Right.
And on mobile, just parsing, not even any of the other exciting stuff like making machine code, just the parsing can take like 10 or 20 seconds. So mobile really amplifies, slowdown. So the question, that really immediately raises the question of, well, we've done everything else. Can either do we do insane hacks for the parser or do we consider binary format? And then if so, how do we make this, fit into the web? And so that's what led to considering a binary format.
Let's say you've got your end goal of WebAssembly, right? You've got it out there. You've got the WebAssembly runtime features in all the browsers. What would the coding process look like for a JavaScript developer then? It wouldn't be necessarily JavaScript, right? It could be anything, right? Down to generate a WebAssembly binary.
Right, yeah. So it's still a compile target that you'd want to pick a language that compiles to WebAssembly. And now at the beginning, we've decided to use a very iterative process where you start with kind of the smallest set of features that are viable.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that set of features mirrors Asm.js. It has a few extra little things that made sense, like in 64s, but it's basically Asm.js. So Asm.js itself is kind of focused on the C++ low-level memory model. So if you have a GC language, which is a lot of them, it's actually not a great target for in V1 of WebAssembly. Now,
mm-hmm.
after we start adding kind of these features that were not in this minimum viable product, things like direct GC integration and being able to directly reference like the DOM and JS, then it will start to become a good target for these GC and higher level languages. So kind of the initial V1 of WebAssembly, you're going to still probably be generating it from C or C++ or another language with a low level memory model, where Rust is another example.
I was just going to say Rust, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And so that you're working on this minimum viable product rather. What's your time frame for that?
Where we are is we have a lot of progress specifying this, both the semantics, the binary formats, and so we're really starting to converge on a thing that it's hard to predict exactly when anything will get done because things can take longer if you find a new issue that needs to be addressed. But
yeah.
There's a shared goal that we should try to have a V1 spec finished and shippable. not that it would have shipped in all browsers, but shippable in within this year. Mm-hmm. And hopefully within the next month or two, we'll start to have, you know, demos that'll be in the Nightly and Canary builds behind a flag that you could, that people can start playing around with it and experimenting.
So now if you're a developer and you're looking at this and saying, wow, long range, let's say, you know, in a year or two, you can potentially write some sort of code, like maybe in Java, maybe in Clojure, maybe in Scala, probably more like in Java and Scala with the types, but that you could turn into binary. That's sounds like it's a long-term goal, but short-term, what kind of developers have been writing applications in ASM that would be suited for WebAssembly? Like, what kind of applications do you see typically written for this?
So we see
games, right?
Well, yeah, that's one kind of category, which is if you're a developer who has a big portable C++ code base, you know, maybe many millions of lines, and it's already portable, right? It's using portable APIs like OpenGL, ES, and you know, SDL for you to abstract over your inputs and how you get a context. Then the porting, so you can pretty much port the whole app, and you're going to be using WebGL instead of OpenGL, but that translation is automatic. And you're going to be using web APIs, but if you've, you know, stuck your app to these portable APIs, that you can port pretty much the whole thing. So that's one category. Mm-hmm. But importantly, it's not the only category. Another thing we're already seeing with ASM.js is basically you have a big web app that's written in, you know, using all sorts of modern JS, you know, frameworks and tools and libraries, and you just want to make some library, which you could have, you know, written in JS. And maybe it's really high performance, so you want to compile that from a C++ library. And so we've seen a bunch of different libraries, like you know, cryptography is a nice example, or a spell checker, or a physics engine, or an audio mixing kind of graph. SQLite, if you want an in-memory relational database. Just a bunch of things. And what you do is you compile from this a C++ library, and then you wrap it with a nice kind of handwritten idiomatic JS interface. And then from outside, you know, you're just using kind of a JS library. But actually, when you call into it, you know, you're calling into this kind of ASM.js compiled code today and what would be WebAssembly code tomorrow. So it's the same, you know, synchronous call stack, and call right in, it can return a value. Or you can, you know, make it an async API or, you know, use workers to offload that work to another thread. But it's kind of the same JavaScript programming API or, you know, model, but just... you know, the inside, the meat of this code is actually this compiled code.
So really, there must already be then some ASM.js-based libraries that are ported from C++ that people are using.
That's right, yeah, there are.
What are some of the popular ones that you've seen?
Yeah, so one original one Alone did, just kind of prove the point, is he compiled a physics library that's pretty popular called Bullets, and he called it ammo.js. And what's neat is just with a few lines of JavaScript, you can get a full... physics, you know, rigid body physics simulator, and we saw a game company that had a handwritten physics engine say switch, you know, but the whole rest of the game engine, the ID and all the bits were written in handwritten JS, and they said, hey, let's swap out, let's use this compiled one, it gets, you know, some better performance, and we don't have to maintain that code, it's already, you know, worked in its, you know, industrial strength. So we already started to see people switch over to it, you know, within a bigger application, and that was one. And if you look at, you know, there's this Mega site, this file sharing site. Mm-hmm. They have, I think they do some sort of client-side encryption. And so they sponsored somebody to port a bunch of crypto libraries. And so if you go to Mega, you'll see ASM.js in the Firefox console saying, you know, it's using ASM.js. And so, you know, they just use that as a library as part of their bigger, you know, totally handwritten JS web app.
Right. Because, I mean, trying to write fast JavaScript there's a lot of tricks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could imagine, like, you know, things like generating a key or something like that would be significantly slower by hand just because of all the garbage collection and, you know, all the processing that JavaScript has to do and parsing the library and everything. So it must be a big difference in terms of performance.
Yeah, and sometimes there's a conflict between, and I've felt this myself when I've written some JavaScript libraries, do I want this to look nice or do I want it to look fast?
Yes.
And if it's fast, maybe I'm using, you know, arrays and a lot of indices, and I'm specifically thinking about not making garbage, and that's sad because that makes me write code that wasn't the idiomatic JS I would have wanted to write.
So you're going to be giving an overview of WebAssembly at ETE. Any specific things that people can look forward to in that talk? No pressure.
Yeah. Well, you know, talk about what it is and show some samples and snippets of how it works, and then show how you would use this, you know, both in the port the whole app if you're kind of a C++ developer,
yep.
or the use a library if you're a JS developer or a framework and you want to see how do I integrate this in my bigger, you know, JS web app. And then also, you know, want to talk about some of the future directions and how we can imagine some of these better web integration of how you can have GC support or directly touch the DOM, stuff like that.
Fantastic. And then for information about this, I know there's GitHub user, github.com/WebAssembly, right?
That's right.
Where all the stuff lives. It looks like there's a specification project and a bunch of other things. Is that the main site to go to for information? Is there like a good homepage?
Oh, yeah, that's the best one. And just recently we put up a kind of a GitHub pages. If you just go to webassembly.github.io, that kind of collates, you know, like some of the, you know, the summary, and it has a bunch of links into, you know, from that kind of high level summary into all the specific parts you might want to see. So that's probably the best landing page if you just want to see, get an overview and then jump into specifics.
All right, Luke, well, thank you so much for spending the time today to talk to us about WebAssembly, and we'll see you at Philly Emerging Tech.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Luke Wagner for taking the time to talk to us about WebAssembly.
If you liked this interview, you may enjoy our upcoming conference, Emerging Technologies for the Enterprise. Held in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania on April 11th to 12th, 2016, the conference features roughly 50 speakers talking about languages, frameworks, mobile and web applications, infrastructure, big data, and much more. For more information, visit phillyemergingtech.com. For show notes, visit us at chariotsolutions.com/techcast. This is episode number 91. Send us feedback via Twitter at TechCast and via email at techcastfeedback@chariotsolutions.com. Thanks again for listening to the Chariot Solutions TechCast, produced by Becca Refford and hosted by Ken Rimple. Until next time.